Chapter 10 Part 1 The next week felt like a dream. The inquest on Agnes Waddell was held, and the only possible verdict was returned. Murder by person or persons unknown. So poor little Agnes, having had her hour of fame, was then buried in the old churchyard, and life in Limstock went on as before. No, that last statement is untrue. Not as before. There was a half-scared, half-excited light in almost everybody's eye. Neighbour looked at neighbour. Somewhere in Limstock was a person who had cracked a girl's skull and pushed a knife into her brain. But no one knew who that person was. And in the evenings, with the curtain drawn, Joanna and I sat talking and arguing over all the various possibilities. Mr. Pye? Miss Ginch? Mrs. Dane Calthrop? Amy Griffith? Emily Barton? Partridge? And all the time, nervously, we waited for something to happen. But nothing did happen. Emily Barton came to tea. Megan came to lunch. We went for drinks with Mr. Pye, and we went to tea at the vicarage. Our afternoon there, in the big, comfortable sitting room, was one of the most peaceful we had spent. The Dane Calthrops had a guest staying with them, a gentle old lady who was knitting something with white wool. It was very pleasant. I don't mean that we did not mention the murder, because we did. Miss Marple, the guest, was very excited by the subject. "Tell me, dear," she said to Mrs. Dane Calthrop, "what do the townspeople say? What do they think?"
"Mrs. Cleetstill, I suppose," said Joanna.
"Oh, no," said Mrs. Dane Calthrop, "not now."
Miss Marple asked who Mrs. Cleet was. Joanna said she was the village witch.
"She's a very silly woman," said Mrs. Dane Calthrop. "She goes out to gather plants when there is a full moon and makes sure that everybody knows about it."
I asked, "But why shouldn't people suspect her of the murder? They thought she had written the letters." Miss Marple said,
"Oh, but the girl was killed with a knife. Very unpleasant. So that means it can't be this Mrs. Cleet, because she could just use her powers to make the girl die from natural causes."
She turned to me.
"Mr. Burton, now you are a stranger here. Perhaps you can find a solution to this problem."
I smiled. The best solution I have had was a dream. In my dream, it all fitted together. Unfortunately, when I woke up, the whole thing was nonsense.
"How interesting! Do please tell me about the nonsense."
"Oh, it all started with the silly phrase, 'No smoke without fire.' And then I got it mixed up with other phrases. Smoke screens, torn bits of paper, telephone messages. No, that was another dream."
"And what was that dream?"
"Well, Elsie Holland, the Symington's governess, was getting married to Dr. Griffith, and the vicar here was reading the service in Latin. And then Mrs. Dane Calthrop got up and said it had got to be stopped. But that part," I smiled, "was true. I woke up and found you standing over me saying it."
"And I was quite right," said Mrs. Dane Calthrop. "But where did a telephone message come in?" asked Miss Marple.
"Oh, I'd forgotten. That wasn't in the dream. I came through the hall and noticed Joanna had written down a message to be given to someone if they rang up." Miss Marple looked at Joanna.
"Will you think me very rude if I ask just what the message was?"
"I don't mind," Joanna said.
I can't remember anything about it myself.
I repeated the message as best I could, worried that it was going to disappoint Miss Marple. But she smiled.
I thought it might be something like that.
Mrs. Dane Calthrop said sharply,
Like what, Jane?
Something quite ordinary.
Miss Marple had begun knitting again.
You know, to commit a successful murder must be very much like doing a magic trick. You've got to make people look at the wrong thing and in the wrong place.
Well, I replied, so far, everybody seems to have looked in the wrong place for our mad person.
I myself, said Miss Marple, would probably look for somebody very sane.
That's what Nash said, I told her. He also said they would be very respectable.
Yes, agreed Miss Marple. That's important.
She looked at Joanna.
Have you had a letter, Miss Burton?
Joanna laughed.
Oh, yes. It said the most awful things.
I'm afraid, said Miss Marple, that people who are young and pretty are likely to be chosen by the writer.
That's why I think it's odd that Elsie Holland hasn't had any, I said.
Is that the Symington's governess? The one you dreamt about, Mr. Burton?
Miss Marple asked.
Yes. She's probably had one and won't say so, said Joanna.
No, I said. I believe her. So does Nash.
Dear me, said Miss Marple. Now that's very interesting. That's the most interesting thing I've heard yet.
Part 2.
It was two nights later that I was driving back from having dinner with an old friend, and it was already dark before I got into Limstock. Something was wrong with the car lights, so I got out and managed to fix them. The road was empty. The first few houses were just ahead, and amongst them was the Women's Institute building. Something made me want to go and have a look at it. A short path led up to the door. I stood for a moment, wondering what I was doing there. Then suddenly, I heard a slight sound, like the movement of a woman's skirt. So I turned and went round the corner of the building, towards where the sound had come from. I couldn't see anybody, so I went on and round the back of the house where there was an open window. I moved nearer to it and listened. I could hear nothing, but I felt sure that there was someone there. My back still wasn't very good, but I managed to climb up and drop down inside. Then I moved forward until I heard a faint sound ahead of me. I had a torch in my pocket and switched it on. At once, a low, sharp voice said, "Switch that off." And I obeyed, for I had immediately recognized the voice. I felt Superintendent Nash take my arm and guide me through a door and into a passage. Here, where there was no window, he switched on a lamp and looked at me more in sadness than in anger.
You would have to interrupt just at that minute, Mr. Burton.
Sorry, I said, but I had a feeling that something was happening.
And it probably was. Somebody came round the house before you. They stopped by the window, then moved on quickly, because they heard you, probably.
I apologized again. But why are you here? Nash said,
I believe that the writer of the letters will want to keep them looking the same. She's got the cut-out pages of that book and can go on using them, but she'll want to type the envelopes on the same machine. So, I worked out that she would come to the Institute after dark to get at the typewriter.
For the third time, I apologized for my unwanted presence and went out into the night. Someone was standing beside my car.
Hello,
Megan said.
What have you been doing?
What are you doing is much more to the point, I said.
I'm out for a walk. I like walking at night. Nobody stops you and says silly things. And I like the stars.
All of that is true, I said. But only cats and witches walk in the dark. And your family will worry about you.
No, they won't. They never worry where I am or what I'm doing.
Well, get in the car and I'll drive you home. It was not quite true what Megan had said. Symington was standing on the doorstep as we drove up. Hello, is Megan there? He called. Yes, I've brought her home. Symington said sharply, You mustn't go off like this without telling us, Megan. Miss Holland has been very worried about you. Megan said something I couldn't hear and went past him into the house.